And I'd like now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe, Rick Iannucci. He is the executive director and founder of Horses for Heroes New Mexico and the Cowboy Up program. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Always nice to be here with you having coffee.
It is indeed.
At the Santa Fe Baking Company.
And these fabulous pastries.
Absolutely. Please get that one away from me.
So you, and we've had you on the air before, but there are people who don't yet know about it. So let's talk about what this program is. You basically make it possible for veterans who are coming back from American wars to reintegrate and heal from post-traumatic events in their lives.
Mary Charlotte, Cowboy Up is a unique horsemanship wellness, and we call it a skill set restructuring program. We're based here in Santa Fe, and we're free to Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom veterans. An active military, if they've sustained physical injuries or combat trauma, we call it, you may know it as PTSD. We don't call it that anymore. That sounds too much like something you catch on a toilet seat at an airport.
Good heavens.
During their time serving our country. So, but from day one, the veterans come out to our place and they're hands-on with our horses. And we begin with the groundwork and we progress to riding as well as participating in other aspects of ranch life out there, including working cattle. But more importantly, they get a chance to experience the camaraderie with the cowboys that are out there that are veterans themselves and are part of our program. We're kind of like a family out there. But we share that strength and hope and hoping that these veterans can recuperate and recreate and reintegrate into society and essentially giving them a new and vital mission.
It's such there's two parts of it that are so amazing to me in the sense of everybody should be doing this. One is that they are with each other and with you guys, and there's such a natural fit between cowboys and returning veterans.
You know, you've been out to our place several times. In fact, if I can just brag on you as a journalist for just a second, we are friends too, but I want to just tell your listening audience, we get requests literally every day for somebody that wants to write a story, do a movie, do this, do that.
Is that right?
About the program, because it is pretty unique. But you're the first veteran, the first journalist that ever came out and said, show me what you do. I want to do what these men and women do. And you came out for successive weeks in a row to participate and actually
you put me on a horse.
And actually do the program, and I applaud you for that.
Well, thank you.
And that made you very special to all of our crew out there. And we want you to know that.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, I felt sort of like I don't want to impose on your time, but it was such it's a profound experience. I mean, that's the other part of it. I mean, first of all, there's the camaraderie that these returning veterans have with one another, and then this natural fit between them and cowboys who have to really do the same kind of discipline in a way and the same kind of attitude. But then, above all, there's this relationship with these majestic animals, namely horses.
Well, you know, our Native American veterans talk to us, and they pretty much nail it down. They say that the horse is the physical bridge between our physical world and the spiritual world.
And I thought that was dogs.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, many years ago, the Native Americans didn't have a word for horses, and they called them sky dogs.
Right.
You know, so there you go.
But, I mean, talk more about that. I mean, what is it? Tell us what it's like for these guys, and indeed for you as a horseman, to be in contact with these animals.
Well, you know, what we start seeing, we'll have someone come out and they either come through one of the programs at the VA, or they get recommended by one of their brothers, battle buddies that they came through the service with or whatever. We have two guys that were in the same explosion together that work together with us on the ranch. But what we see is the beginning of a healing process as they start getting around these four-legged instructors. And we start seeing kind of like a healing. The first thing we see, it's just is a healing in the sense that they start developing faith in themselves again. And then secondly, we start seeing them have a faith in each other. And then finally we start seeing an evolution, and then they have a faith in God, you know, and that takes them into that spiritual realm. You know, we use a lot of techniques that are out there today that many, many years ago, you might say they're foo-foo techniques, but the mindfulness stuff that really, really works, and we support all that. You know, when you're on a horse, you have to be present in the moment.
You better be mindful.
You better be mindful, you know, and because it demands your attention. You know, if you start sleeping at the switch, so to speak, you may get injured, you may get hurt, you know. You'll miss something that you need to be paying attention to.
It's a very interesting thing because there's so many ways of healing, and I think everybody who's gone through something really awful finds their way of healing, and there's not one technique that's just right for everybody. But there is something about being outdoors and being with animals which no psychotherapist's office can give you, no matter how good that person is.
Exactly. You know, we have one of our fellows came out. You were here last week with Carl Hawkins from Hawkins Chuckwagon, and we were all talking, having a coffee here when you were on the air. But he's one of our instructors, two tours in Vietnam, Purple Heart recipient, 14 years as a gunnery sergeant, U.S. Marine Corps Recon. But that's the kind of individuals. He worked on every ranch in Texas, all the sixes and the, you know, the Pitchfork and Haythorn, and he worked for the Singletons for a while. But the point I'm making is that the horses are the first part of the healing process. Once the guys and gals get off the horse, they've got a guy like Carl standing there handing them a cup of cowboy coffee saying, welcome home. And that is where that healing is amplified and enhanced, as you're saying. It is that camaraderie. We have veterans tell us, look, says, I don't want to be disrespectful to the VA, but for a year and a half I sat in a little white room and didn't tell them anything. I couldn't talk to the girl.
Right.
Or the therapist or something. He said, I talked to you and Carl and Brian and Chris Chase, you know, and all the guys. I talked to you guys more in an hour and a half on a Sunday afternoon than I talked in a year and a half every day at the VA, you know.
Right.
So that's the kind of healing and feeling that we get on the ranch.
We're talking to Rick Iannucci about Horses for Heroes New Mexico. So what is a typical day like in the program?
Well, you know, right now we're a day program, and it's a self-paced program.
Okay.
We train to a certain standard. We have 13 terminal performance objectives that the men and women have to work their way through. And by the way, one of our best cowboys is actually a cowgirl. And why am I not surprised either? And you know, and she just gets out there and whoops it on, and the guys just go, wow. But our gal Emily. But there is no real typical day, other than the fact that you're going to get up, the sun's going to shine, you've got to water, feed animals, groom, et cetera, et cetera. Anything can happen during that day. We share, we have the unique privilege of being partnered with the New Mexico Cattle Growers Association and the member ranches that they have. And several of our area ranchers, Henry McKinley from the Staple Cross and Steve Price from Bonanza Creek, which are right across the street from us, always provide our guys and gals an opportunity to go out and work with them. So one day they could be learning how to fix a windmill. The next day they can be feeding cattle from a feed truck or you know, those type of things. Or fixing fence or counting calves or whatever it might be. So there's no real typical day, other than the fact that we know we're going to start with horsemanship and get a session or two in, and then move from there.
Another part of it, which I think must be so healing, is doing meaningful physical labor, because that tires you out, but in a really good way.
Exactly right. And doing meaningful physical labor with each other, sharing that laugh, and it does my heart a lot of good when I hear two battle buddies out there, you know, laughing, you know. And that's something that you know, is very rare in some of the situations that we've been involved in.
How did you come up with this whole thing?
Well, you know, I served as a Green Beret back in another lifetime, and I've always was raised around horses and working with our neighbors. We originally were in New Mexico, and Nancy and I had the Turquoise Trail Wranglers 4-H Club, which was kind of like a ranch rodeo club for Santa Fe County. And we started working, and one of our friends came up to us and said, hey, listen, would you be amenable to working with a veteran? And I said, what time and when do they get here? You know, it's that's like a non-request question. You know, it's and we started with one individual, and then we moved on and to several others. And then at one point, you know, it started and stopped, and it waxed and waned, as they say. But eventually we had the opportunity to do, in Veterans Day of 09, I guess it was, we had the opportunity to do kind of like a little cowboy clinic at the ranch, the Crossed Arrows Ranch, our place on 14. And we had veterans from the PTSD and the STAR programs come out. And that's when we looked and we said, you know what, this is something that, this is a direction that we probably need to go in and go down the road. One of the things that we saw with one of our earlier veterans that we were working with, he said, where are you guys going? You know, we had finished the session with him, and he said, I said, we're going out and we're going to move some cattle around. He said, do you mind if I go? And we said, sure. Come on, jump in the truck. And we went out, and we were out at Bonanza Creek. And when we got done, we were watching. This is a guy that had worked with explosive ordinances, and we watched. Within weeks, we watched a transformation. Within a season, we watched a transformation just by with this guy working with us on the ranches, doing ranch stuff, and basically redoing his whole skill set. We were riding back, and Steve Price and I, the manager of Bonanza Creek Group, said, you know, if everybody could just cowboy up like this guy and get this new mission and get this new focus, I think this would cure a lot of what ails them out there with this combat trauma.
And that's where the cowboy up name came from.
And that's a term that we use a lot of times, and they use it overseas, the guys. You know, hey, we're getting hit by mortars, you got to cowboy up and get on it, you know. So we brought that phrase into it, and that, thus the beginning of that program. And that's where we transitioned from basically doing horse therapy, which, you know, is very important, and that's always going to be the cornerstone of what we do, to skill set restructuring. You know, Mary Charlotte, I get a guy, and he comes out, and I say, you know, other people are saying to him, maybe therapists, whatever, saying to him, forget all that happened to you, or this is a new day is dawning, we're going to do it, you know, whatever. But I look at these guys and I say, tell me what the last thing you remember you knew how to do well was before you lost an arm or got blown up or got wounded. And they say, oh, man, I was on a combat patrol, and I was the bomb. You know, I was rocking and rolling. We were out there. We were doing our thing. And I say to them, okay, I'm going to teach you how to move cattle the same way. And they look at me like I'm a cyclop with an eye in the middle of my forehead. And I go, listen, you remember your formula for patrolling, your COCOA formula, avenues of approach, cover and concealment, things of that, key terrain features? Yeah, I said, well, we're going to do the same thing when we move cattle. When we've got mama cows and their babies behind a ravine down there, and we ask you to go out and gather them, you're not going to go headlong into that little herd there, because why? You'll spill it all over the place, and then we have real trouble trying to gather it back up and move it towards where we're going to gather at. And so they say, yeah, they start seeing that, and they say, yeah. So you're going to go at them very easy. You're going to observe your areas of approach. You're going to look at key terrain features, and you're going to apply all the same things that you did in combat situation to just a simple thing like gathering these cattle.
It really helps that you understand from your own experience as a Green Beret what their lives were like. Again, unlike, you know, a very nice person in an office who's never experienced anything like what they've lived.
Exactly. And we had a very interesting conversation, and she's become a friend of ours, Temple Grandin, Dr. Grandin from Colorado State University.
Yeah, she's amazing.
She is amazing, and she has been very supportive of what we're doing and had some very kind things to say about us to the media when she was interviewed for a Military Times article. But she said basically the same thing that you're saying. Integrating that was a pretty unique thing, especially for the traumatic brain injury participants. For instance, what we noticed is that as you, with the traumatic, and mostly everyone that's been wounded has some type of traumatic brain injury, in a sense, if they've been hit by a improvised explosive device, what we discovered that they've lost some of their verbal acuity. And so when we say, what I'd like you to do, Mary Charlotte, is pick up that item right there, I would like you to take it over to the barn, and I'd like you, you know, well, we lost them after what I'd like you to do is, you know. So what we discovered is that we were operating under the special forces mantra of see one, do one, and teach one. And this is unique to our program. And what we do is they'll see it, we'll explain it, and we always have somebody on horseback demonstrating it. And then the best part of it is you're only a student, so to speak, one time at the ranch. After that, you're an assistant instructor. Because even if all you know how to do is the grooming part, you're teaching that to the next veteran that comes up along line. By doing that, it reinforces all the teaching points that they may have learned a week before, a day before, or however long it was before their first session.
One of the things that I was wondering about is there's a lot of discussion about how important it is or isn't for the person who's been injured and the person who's been traumatized to tell the story of what happened. And I wondered if that's something that kind of comes out naturally in the course of time, or is it something that you really don't encourage people to do? Or,
well, you know, what we say to them is that we're not counselors, we're comrades. You speak what you want to speak. We listen to whatever's on your mind. We don't encourage or discourage either way. So if someone wants to chat about that, you know, and a lot of what happens around the little fire out by the corrals, you know where it is. And you know, if someone feels like speaking a little bit about something, and one of the more interesting experiences that I was blessed to have was with one of my Native American veterans who was actually living in my home at the time. And, you know, we were up one night after a big dinner, and he had never told anybody the story of his experience about being wounded, losing a limb, and then watching his own family around him in a funeral. That you know, he had a vision, and he told me that he explained. I said, you know, I've never told anybody that, and I was stunned. I you know, and all I did was listen, and so. That's the biggest part of it, is just being able to listen. And you get that patience through that brotherhood and understanding that, listening to old cowboys tell stories. And it's the same thing as you can imagine.
We're talking to Rick Iannucci about Horses for Heroes New Mexico and the Cowboy Up program. Now, you've got a number of things going on. You also have programs for women.
We do. Nancy has designed, Nancy DeSantis, our co-director, has designed a program for women. It's basically a women's retreat based upon some courses she's taking with Melissa Pierce from Colorado, Touched by a Horse. And it's a women's coaching program. They experience coaching through interaction with the horses on the ground. And we'll have to get her on one time and that's a whole program.
Yeah.
That's a whole, you know, and some of the transformation. That program is open to women of all wars. So we have a number of Vietnam era women veterans in there, as well as Iraqi and Afghanistan women. We did 4 women's retreats last year, 3 the year before, and we're scheduled to do 4 next year as well. And they're wonderful programs. We feed them a gourmet lunch, and there's no men on the premise at the time. Everybody gets the boot. We get out of there. We set everything up for them, and then we just let them do their own things, because a lot of them are working through issues that they had maybe with their brother soldiers, and they just need to work that out in an exclusive atmosphere of women's
right.
and support of women.
I mean, we hear about all the rape and sexual abuse that happens within the military.
Well, I can't speak to that because I'm not part of that program,
yeah.
but we support that, and that is and will always be a major part of what we do, and part of our outreach is to the women veterans. There's not much out there for them, and this past year we had a great staff that was extremely supportive. We were privileged to have Connie Jo Mitchell from the San Cristobal Ranch that came out and gave us a hand with the horses as a horse handler. We had Judy Snyder from Healing Horses up in Abiquiu came down with Nancy. So it's a really, really wonderful and worthwhile program. We'll probably, as we move into this next year, of course, as you well know, we're finishing our bunkhouse out there, and our bunkhouse is a little mini wellness center and team room. So once we have that completed, the women will then be able, and the program will then go from it being a day program exclusively to being more of a resident program, and being able to, we find that continuity is so important, and that's something that we strive to do despite the fact that we didn't have a facility. And the past 2.5 years, we've had people literally living in our home.
Right.
We cook a lot of pasta for the last couple of years.
the Iannucci blood comes
that's
right
it,
out.
That's it.
And now you also have a program called the Seed Stock Program. What's that about?
The Seed Stock Program was our first program. We had livestock on our property, half a dozen cows or so, that heifers they were. And what we did was one of our Native Americans who's out on the Navajo Reservation on the border between Arizona and New Mexico wanted to get involved in ranching. And as a graduate of our program, we're supportive of anybody that wants to get in any venture that's ag-oriented at all at any level. So he was able to work with the USDA and the National Resource Conservation Service, and we were able to get him fencing so he could cross-fence some land that was loaned or gifted to him from the res and his family. And basically, we worked on the gestation tables. We bought a bull for those heifers, put the bull on there. We worked out the breeding cycles and everything like that. And I'm proud and pleased to announce that we had our first crop of calves this year, born on the Navajo Reservation. So,
amazing.
Yeah, now that's only half the story. The rest of the story is that as yearlings, they come back to us so that the other veterans can train on those cattle, learn how to sort, learn how to move them quietly, a la Temple Grandin, low stress handling, and then they'll go back to be bred, and the cycle will repeat itself. So that's just the first seed stock operation. The third part of that, the trifecta on that, is that we will now have an outlet and a satellite ranch out on the Navajo Reservation that our Native Americans that are on that side of the country can partake in and participate in.
Now, do people, how shall I say this, graduate, so to speak? Do they move on?
Well, you know, graduation is kind of a weird term, you know.
Yeah.
What we say to them is, yeah, you're a graduate. We give them a purple wild rag, you know, one of those cowboy bandanas.
Right.
And what we say to them and what we caution them is that this is a commencement. You can now start learning. What we've given you is the skills to basically start learning. You now know cowboy etiquette, ranch etiquette, the code, and things of that nature. And you have you're able to take some skills, and you can sit a horse, and you can do all the things that you need to do horseback as you move into start learning again. So that's actually how it is. And anybody that's ranched for, you know, you learn something every day, you know. And so, and if you keep an open mind, and as the martial artists say, if you keep that white belt on, the symbol of learning, you'll always, you will always learn something, you know. You'll always be receptive to that. So our Native American guys on Laguna, for instance, teach us something all the time. They have we go out, and the Cedillo cattle growers, John Romero and Stuart Romero, and those guys have been great partners to us. And you go out, and when you go out to that res, you start with a prayer. Then you gather the cattle. Then you start your work. Then they feed you like nobody's business. I sometimes think they're Italians, the way they feed you. But we're constantly learning. we see there the old culture and the respect for the for those ways and the great mystery that they that that, that they respect merged with infrared IR ear tags for horses,
right.
And you know, gentle livestock handling and more modern methods. So our guys will learn that as well when they go out there, and gals.
We're talking to Rick Iannucci of Horses for Heroes New Mexico and the Cowboy Up program. Now, you mentioned a little while ago that you are building this bunkhouse, which will make it possible for it to be a residential program. What are you going to do?
Well, what our plan is as we said before, one of the challenges for us is to maintain the continuity. It's kind of like learning how to fly or drive. You know, if you can fly one day, and if you don't fly for 3 weeks, or if you don't drive a car for another 6 weeks, it's you have to you interrupt your momentum, so to speak.
Right.
So what this will allow us, having a bunkhouse on the place, will allow us to maintain that continuity. It'll also allow us to stretch out a little bit. We've been able to forge a partnership with the Warrior Transition Units. Colonel Tim Karcher from Washington, D.C., who is the commander, the battalion commander of that unit, AW2. We met in Texas this past year in the spring, and we kind of crafted a loose arrangement that we're going to have. We already experimented with one of the Ranger veterans that was in the Warrior Transition Unit at Fort Benning. He came out for 10 days. And what we'll end up doing is having our guys that are the New Mexico veterans working with veterans that are going to come from the different Warrior Transition Units, and there's 35 of them in the United States. We'll probably start with Fort Collins and maybe El Paso, Fort Bliss down there, and start bringing them in where traveling's a little bit easier. Just till we get our feet wet with them. So they'll work in conjunction and alongside of all the veterans that are already in the program so that they can actually kind of like a train the trainers or a mentor type thing.
You must have so much demand. I mean, there's only so much room and so many horses and so many people whom you can train.
Exactly. And that's the thing. We, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm drinking out of a fire hose, you know, some afternoons. You know, if they do an article in the paper or a radio show such as yours that's so well received, we'll get calls. So we do have to triage the workload, and we'd love to take every single person that, you know, that calls us and comes out. And unfortunately, we are all volunteer staff. Nobody makes a dime. Any contributions or donations that we get go directly to, and I don't have to tell you what hay's cost in a bale, you know, these days. And
right.
With a two and a half, three-year drought under our belts here in New Mexico, we're feeding rocks and choya right now in addition to hay. But so it's an expensive project, and maintaining that level of horse is always difficult, but we manage, and you know, grace of God, we're moving on.
Now, one of the other things that you're doing, and I don't know how you get all the things done that you do. I mean, there's only so many hours in a day, and you do have to sleep and eat and all this, but you're also starting a prison program. Tell us about that.
Well, we're working with Department of Veteran Services, Colonel Tim Hale, three cabinet secretaries, Jeff Witte from the Department of Agriculture, and Greg Mercantile, who is the Department of Corrections. A while back, we got approached by Chuck Franco, who is also one of our veterans and the husband of Governor Susana Martinez, and one of our great supporters. And we've been having a persistent issue about these unwanted and neglected horses. Now, I'm not talking about the wild Mustangs. I'm just talking about what the New Mexico Livestock Board and Miles Culbertson's staff is getting on a daily basis as the drought increases. So Chuck and I spent a lot of time talking and discussing this problem. And I said to him, let me give it some thought and see if I can come up with a solution. He had also called me one afternoon when he was working with the director of corrections, Greg Mercantile, a phenomenal visionary guy, and said, hey, we might have some grass down here. Do you think we could put some horses out? And I said, let me come up with a more well-rounded idea and a plan, and I'll get back with you. I did, and was able to get Colonel Tim Hale on board, Cabinet Secretary for Veteran Services. And what the plan was that we came up with and presented was that we would take veterans, perhaps suffering from PTSD and maybe in the institutions that have committed maybe minor crimes, maybe a level two institution like Springer that they're lodged in.
So veterans who are in a prison.
Currently incarcerated. Okay. Currently incarcerated. And what we're going to do with those veterans is we're going to make a wing, basically a bunkhouse inside the prison for the veterans. Those veterans are going to be the first group of veterans that my guys that are in my Cowboy Up program are going to go inside the prison and do a train the trainers. Now, where are we going to get the horses? The horses are going to come from the New Mexico Livestock Board and the livestock inspectors that are picking up some of these. And I understand there are like 12 a week that they're a dozen a week that they're picking up off the different places that are neglected or people just can't feed them or for whatever reason. Those horses we're going to intake at one of the institutions, maybe Santa Fe, and then from there we'll sort them out, and the ones that look like most likely to succeed, so to speak, we'll bring up to that institution, and then our guys who have trained will train the prisoners that are in there, their old battle buddies in many cases, to work with these animals. So that's, we'll start rehabbing a lot of these animals, start working with them, and let the animals get trust back in these two-leggeds again, which they may have already lost because of the abuse and neglect that they may have been subjected to.
So talk about helping both the horses and the people.
Absolutely. And we're in the formative stages right now, but we've got the complete backing of the Martinez administration, and we're very pleased. And it's pretty innovative. There are other prison programs that have worked with the Mustangs, like Canyon City up in Colorado and things like that, and they're very successful. But this is a little spin on that, but it handles a problem, a persistent problem that we're having in New Mexico, and is basically a problem that's indigenous to the Southwest and particularly New Mexico.
Now, have other organizations followed your lead, or are others doing the kind of thing that you're doing in other places in, shall we say, cowboy country?
We got a call from the USDA, and they were looking to expand their reach to the veterans, and we were basically told that we were the only essentially, quote, Cowboy 101 type program in the nation. And they sent a group of people out from USDA and took photos and interviewed us and talked a little bit about how we were set up. And the thing about it is you need a strong ranch community that's supportive of this type of operation. For instance, the New Mexico cattle growers and the member ranches, Karen Cowan, who's the director of the cattle growers, and a good friend of ours, is constantly trying to support us in any way that they can. So having that community involvement and that community buy-in and the emotional buy-in is extremely meaningful. Not only it's not just lip service from that kind of community, as many other communities are. They wave the flag twice a year, Veterans Memorial Day. After that, they put the flag away, and that's the end of their participation in this issue. Not so with this group that we're working with, and somebody like the cattle growers, where we're out there. Grant Mitchell from the San Cristobal Ranch constantly assisting our guys. Hey, we're doing this. Bring your guys out. The other ranch, Henry McKinley, 84 years old this January, showing my guys how to rope, showing my guys how to flank cattle. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that, being
right.
Taught by the masters,
But you would think that there would be spin-off programs all over the place, because it's so satisfying, not only for the veterans, but for you who are watching these people come back, really step into a human life again after being so traumatized.
It's true. And what we do, we get calls. literally every day from all across the country by people who want to start something similar. Hey, I've only got one horse. And our response to them is like, just do it. You know, do whatever you can do within your scope, you know. Whatever your programmatic capabilities are, do it, you know. Don't try to be something you're not, but be everything you can be. You know, Mary Charlotte, volunteerism is organic to our family. You know, we're an Italian Catholic family that, you know, that was brought up that way. My grandfather, you know, used to say, if you don't give your gifts away, you know, God's going to take them away from you, you know. And so we're always, with that in mind, you know, we're always trying to make sure that we're true to that, you know, that grandpop's mantra, so to speak.
Right. Now, you have a wonderful thing coming up, which you do every year, which is the Cowboy Christmas Dinner and Dance. And this year, it's Friday, the 30th of November at 6 o'clock at La Fonda. It's a benefit for Horses for Heroes, New Mexico. And it's good stuff.
You bet. This year is going to be a humdinger. We sell this thing out every year. We started small with just 150 people, but we never want to get too big. But we took this year, we made a decision that we weren't going to do the live auction. We just wanted everybody to have a lot of fun. So the American Gold Star Mothers, who, as you know, they're the group of wonderful women who are dear friends, and they decided that they would run the silent auction for us this year in honor of the children that they've lost in combat. And what we decided to do was basically have a great, great time. It's the only thing that we do for fundraising every year. Whatever we make on this is what we put into our operational budget. But this year is going to be a humdinger. We've got R.W. Hampton, Western Music Association's Vocalist of the Year last year, and the Santa Fe, Taos Santa Fe favorites, Kim and the Caballeros, who are going to come out. Kim and Chip are dear friends of ours as well. They're going to be letting you burn your boots up by dance. But it's going to be a great time. Sean Murphy at La Fonda is preparing a charbroiled steak dinner, and it's a sit-down dinner. It's, you know, not a buffet line. But it's just going to be a wonderful, wonderful event. And now, we've got some very, very interesting silent auction items that people can bid on.
I mean, I am sitting here in the Santa Fe Baking Company, and Rick has opened up a box that inside has a blue satin cushion that holds a knife. And it's a very, very special knife. Tell us about this.
Well, as you know, I was on the Joint Terrorist Task Force when 9/11 happened, and we were on site there. And one of my old partners, a New York City detective now, now a sergeant, going to be a lieutenant, he said, hey, he's always stayed in touch. He says, what are you guys doing for your show this year? And I said, hey, we're just going to do a silent auction. He said, you want a piece of the World Trade Center? And I went, okay. And he said, I'm going to send you something. So within short order, we received not only a piece of the World Trade Center steel, but a package from Emerson Knives out in California. And I couldn't know what was in there. And I opened it up, and it was the carcasses of blanks that were stamped out. One blank was left, and they were a series of knives in there. And one blank was full. And so what we discovered was that these were the knives made from the steel from the World Trade Center for the presentation knives that were given to the Navy SEALs that were on the Bin Laden raid. So we ended up with one of them. And Dick Kimberly, a local craftsman who's the dear friend of ours, he was head of the Sheriff's Posse for a long time, and a Special Forces dad, ended up, we turned it over to him, and last Sunday he came over to the house and put that on the table. And this particular knife has a handle of curly maple, the same kind of wood stock that was used on World War II M1 rifles. And as interesting is the top and bottom stanchions on it.
Made of copper.
Made of copper. These came off of the Revolutionary War ship Old Ironsides.
The copper is literally from?
From the ship.
Amazing.
That Dick was able to get some time back. And on this side has got the snake that he's embedded in there. Don't tread on me. And then the 13 stars for the original colonies on there. He's got it in a satin blue presentation box and a picture of the World Trade Center before and the World Trade Center as it was being destroyed. So this is a collector's item. I don't even know how to price this. I mean, I don't even...
And that's going to be in the silent auction.
This is going to be in the silent auction, and I already have guys calling me from, can I bid on it from the... I said, no, you have to be here, man.
Right.
The other thing that we have is Ambassador Joe Wilson and Valerie Plame have offered dinner for four at their home. That's going to be a very interesting item for us to have.
To bid on.
To bid on, yeah. I'd love to have dinner. I mean, they're great people if you've never met them.
Yes,
indeed. They're absolutely wonderful. And I just want to talk about her book. She's got a great book.
Fair Game. Which is made into a great movie.
Great movie. And they're just absolutely wonderful people. Their children are wonderful. And they've become good friends of ours and very supportive of us.
And they're American heroes, too.
They are.
So the dinner is on Friday, November 30th at 6 o'clock at La Fonda. And I guess you've got to get tickets in advance because, as you said, it sells out. You can't just go to the door.
Correct. The best way to get tickets literally is to go online. It's horsesforheroes.org. And there's a button in there to navigate through to get the tickets. And then you click on. Now, the interesting thing that we do every year, a lot of people say, hey, I can't make it. I'm going to the National Finals Rodeo, or I'm going here, I'm going there. So we ask them, if you can't make it and you still want to be supportive, buy a ticket for one of my Wounded Warriors so they can attend the event.
Nice. Rick Iannucci is founder and executive director of Horses for Heroes New Mexico and the Cowboy Up program. They are on the web at horsesforheroes.org. It's always great to have you on the air, and we'll see you at the Cowboy Dinner.
We're looking forward to seeing you. And as we always say, this is our favorite radio program in the U.S. of A.
Thank you very much. It's always good to have you on it. And we're going to go out today with some cowboy music from the disc, which is actually from Horses for Heroes, New Mexico. It's called That Old Sunset Trail, New Songs and Ballads of the Old West.
Just because you wear a Stetson don't make you a cowboy, cowboy. Just because you say howdy, ma'am, don't make you a cowboy, cowboy. Get up there and show me how you ride, 'cause I don't need a tenderfoot by my side. Just because you saw a rodeo one time don't make you a cowboy, cowboy.
I'm delighted now to welcome to the program Jesse Gutierrez. He is outreach coordinator for StoryCorps. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So StoryCorps is a big story, and we're kind of giving people a preview right now. From January 8th to February 9th, StoryCorps has a mobile booth, which is going to be here in Santa Fe, listening to community stories.
Yes, definitely. So the mobile booth is an Airstream trailer. So it's a beautiful silver trailer, and it's outfitted with a mobile recording studio. And we'll be here in Santa Fe for about a month, 4 weeks, parked at the plaza in front of the Palace of the Governors.
Right.
And, so we'll be here recording stories of Santa Fe, people from Santa Fe, and it's anyone can come, and it's a free public service.
Santa Fe and really anywhere else.
Yeah, really. And then surrounding
communities,
pueblos, communities, yeah. Everyone. It's open to anyone. We're here doing kind of an advanced visit meeting with community-based organizations, basically trying to reach out to communities that might not know StoryCorps or might not necessarily have access to the internet. So we're trying to reach out through, community stakeholders, through people that can connect us to communities.
And so one of the things that's really interesting is, okay, so you go into this booth in the Airstream silver beautiful trailer for 40 minutes,
yes.
And they ask you questions along the lines of what are you most proud of, what have you learned in life, and how would you like to be remembered?
Yeah, so we don't ask any of the questions. I think what makes the experience so interesting is that we ask that people come with someone that they know. It could be, you know, friends, family members, coworkers. We've had like mentor, mentees, students, teachers. Basically, people that you know and you feel comfortable talking with to share a conversation. And these questions, we do have like a list of great questions that we kind of provide to people to just take a look at. And these questions just kind of are starting points of a conversation. But yeah, like if you're talking to your grandmother, you can ask, you know, what was my dad like when he was growing up? You know?
Right.
Yeah, so it's kind of just like starting conversations, having these 40 minutes to set aside to just have a conversation. And then at the end of the conversation, you get a free CD copy of that conversation to, you know, make copies of, give to your family. And then if you so decide, you can release the story to StoryCorps, and then it'll be archived at the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C. And we have this archive that has over 40,000 stories archived there now. Anyone can go now and look at the StoryCorps archive if you want to do research on, like, you know, anything, basically, and you'll hear real-life people's stories.
It's such an incredibly valuable historical document.
Yeah.
Do you categorize it, I mean, not only by place, but by theme, like agricultural workers or professors or that kind? I mean,
definitely. So in the booth, there's space for two people to have that conversation, but there's also a third person in there, and that's our facilitator, one of our staff. And they're just there to kind of get the best audio, but also to take notes. And they know they take notes on places, themes, people. So like if you're talking about your grandmother, but you don't say her name, they might ask you, what's your grandmother's name? And that's, so you have a great recording to take home with you, as a, memento, this kind of living legacy, but also for the archive. So if someone wants to go and, do research on, let's say, their grandfather was a bracero and they're typing braceros, anyone that mentioned bracero in their interview, all those interviews will come up and you'll be listening to these people's stories and then talking about braceros. So
can you imagine if we had that every generation? I mean, yeah. Even people who came up in the 1920s and the 1900s, I mean, there's so much that's forgotten and there's so much that historians would like to know about that.
Yeah, it's amazing. And me, on a personal level, like, my grandparents tell me these great stories of how they immigrated to the U.S. My grandpa was a bracero. But I don't have it, it's not recorded, and it's in my mind. But what if I forget? What if, how can I pass this on? I think this is what is so special about these CDs, is that they're like legacies, family legacies. But then it's a legacy for our country, because it's an archive in D.C.
Now, do people sometimes in these conversations discover things? I imagine they're always discovering things about each other that they didn't know. Like, let's say a mother-daughter goes in.
Yeah, definitely. It's that, you talk to your family members and, you kind of have these conversations and sometimes you pay attention, sometimes you don't. But because you're in a booth across from one another and you're kind of there for 40 minutes, yeah, these conversations take probably like really intimate turns, and I think people discover amazing things about their family members. Or sometimes people go in set to discuss something that might be hard to discuss on a normal basis, and they just find this opportunity and do it.
Yeah, there's something about being in a kind of special enclosed place and having that privacy and that time set aside. Very,
exactly.
Very interesting.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of tears end up flowing, I think, a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's called StoryCorps, and StoryCorps will be here from January 8th to February 9th. And we'll probably do another little show closer to the time and tell people how they can get involved if they want to.
Yeah, definitely go onto the website, storycorps.org. And definitely a couple weeks before that, we'll have appointments opening up for the public. So
okay, great.
Go on there.
So StoryCorps is StoryCorps.org. Jesse Gutierrez is Outreach Coordinator for StoryCorps. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.